shed dark echo
Seva milchama al oyevecha unsana Adonai Elohecha biyodecha vishavisa shivyo. When you go out to war against your enemy, and here they are referring not to the obligatory wars of conquest of Eretz Yisrael or against Amalek, where the entire nation has to be destroyed. Here, they're talking about taking captives, specifically women. And the first part of Ki Teitse deals with the famous issue of Yafat Toar, the captive, the beautiful captive.
OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. And this show is for Parshat Ki Teitse, recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 12th day of Elul, 5778, corresponding this year to August 23rd. Let us say Tehillim Kuf Lamed and get down to business for the Parsha. A very busy parsha, which we will just touch in a few places. Shir la ha'ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shimava koli tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avono tishmorya Adonai miya amod. Ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivare. Kiviti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbei mo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara v'ashivya, ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, המקום ירחם עליהם ויוציאם מצרה לרווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה. השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. If you heard the show last week, you know that I focused on the pasuk, the two mitzvot, in the pasuk in Parshat Shofetim, Devarim 17:11, Al Pi HaTorah Asher Yorucha. That pasuk captured me again. I took a look at last year's treatment in Torah Tidbits of Parshat Shofetim, and that pasuk was a main focus, and probably in some of the years before that, certainly this year. And it was a weird experience of giving a shiur on Monday, as I usually do at the center, on that pasuk, writing about it, and not being quite satisfied with my treatment and presentation, so that when I had the opportunity to give a shiur at the OU Israel Center last Shabbat, I devoted the full hour to it, and I sort of was finally satisfied. But now getting into Parshat Ki Teitzeh, I want to lean back on that pasuk by taking a look at two psukim for starters. Now, as introduction, let me tell you, which I'm sure I have spoken of in the past, and to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street. Dr. Zeus wrote that book. It was his first children's book back in 1937. I think he wrote it on the proverbial napkin in a bar. And it's a book that I had bought to read to my children. And one of the pictures in the book struck me very strongly. The story is of a boy named Marco, who lives, I guess, in New York City way back when. And when his father sends him off to school, he says, "When you come home, tell me what you saw on the way to and from school," something like that. So the rest of the book is about Marco's imagination. He sees a wagon being drawn by a horse and immediately dismisses the idea of telling his father about such a mundane occurrence. And then he lights up and says, "Well, what if the wagon were pulled by a zebra? That would certainly be interesting to tell my father." And from there, he went from a wagon to a sled, to a chariot, to a zebra, to an elephant, to a bandwagon, and just embellished and embellished and embellished. Somewhere in the middle of the book is a picture of this bandwagon pulling a trailer, a little house with an old man sitting on a rocking chair, so that he at least would be able to hear all of the band's music, under the assumption that since this would be in a parade, bystanders at the side of the street would only hear a little bit of the music. So he had attached the trailer with the old guy, and the wagon was pulled by an elephant, which Marco decided would not quite be strong enough to pull all of that weight. So in his imagination, he harnessed two giraffes to the elephant to pull the wagon. I stopped when I got to that picture, and I said, "What's wrong with this picture?" And the answer was, it seems to be describing a prohibition from the Torah. That brings us to the first of two psukim in Parshat Ki Teitzeh. Not at the beginning, but towards the beginning. And the one pasuk goes like this: Lo tacharosh bishor uvachamor yachtav. Do not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Okay. The question then is it forbidden to pull a bandwagon with a trailing house, with an elephant and two giraffes harnessed together? The answer is, it too is forbidden. The next question, which is very sensitive, is it forbidden by Torah law, or is it forbidden by rabbinic law, who are empowered, the rabbis, the sages, through the generations with the Sanhedrin, to legislate that which they feel is in the spirit of a Torah mitzvah, or protection for a Torah mitzvah, or similar enough that it should be forbidden as well? So however you want to describe the two giraffes with an elephant pulling a bandwagon, it certainly is not contained in the written Torah. The written Torah says, do not plow, not being done here, with an ox, no ox here, and a donkey, no donkey here, together. In order to appreciate the level of prohibition that this scene is, we have to accept the teachings of the oral law, which tell us that the prohibition of plowing with an ox and a donkey was using a common example, but meant to be inclusive of all activities with any pair of incompatible animals, regardless of what they're doing. So the old pioneers of the Wild West, who came west with their covered wagons, drawn by their horse, with their cow tied to the back, were in violation of a Torah prohibition of lo tacharosh b'shor uvechamor yachdav. Even if you want to say that shor, ox, includes cow, a donkey is not a horse, and pulling a wagon and being tied to the wagon is not plowing. Yet our sages teach us that the Torah violation, the Torah prohibition of plowing with an ox and a donkey means, not is extended by rabbinic law, but means the harnessing together of two non-compatible animals, which a giraffe and an elephant definitely qualify for, and they even satisfy the Rambam's additional requirement, with elephants being non-kosher and giraffes being kosher, of pulling a wagon, same thing as plowing. Torah law. Question, how do we know? Answer I already gave you. It is part of the oral Torah as transmitted from generation to generation by the sages. It is not legislation which would make it rabbinic law, albeit inspired by the Torah, albeit having the authority of the Torah behind it. So the answer to the question of how do we know that you can't harness an elephant and two giraffes to pull a bandwagon is Pasuk Devarim 17:11, Al pi ha-Torah asher yorucha, according to the Torah which they will teach you, v'al ha-mishpat asher yomeru lecha, and on the judgments which they will tell you, ta'aseh, you shall do, followed by a prohibition to veer from the teachings of Chazal, neither to the right nor to the left. Now follow me on this. The very next verse is Lo tilbash sha'atnez. You shall not wear sha'atnez, which is what? Tzemer ufishtim yachdav. Wool and linen together. The two verses are remarkably similar in structure. Lo, thou shalt not. A verb, tacharosh, or tilbash. Two items, tzemer ufishtim, shor vachamor, and the closing word, yachdav, together. So if we're not allowed to wear garments of wool and linen woven together, what about wool and cotton? Not forbidden. Not only not forbidden, not even an extension of the prohibition of sha'atnez. It's nothing. And anyone who says, I am personally strict on the laws of sha'atnez, and I do not mix any fibers, is a shota, a fool. That's not even a praiseworthy chumrah, a praiseworthy strict measure. It is wool, specifically, linen, specifically, and tilbash, wearing. If I want to weave a parochet, the curtain which covers the holy ark in the shul, I can weave it with wool and linen, pure, 100% sha'atnez, and use it in shul without any qualms. No one can say, hey, we're not talking about a tapestry that you hang in your own home. We're talking about covering the ark that contains the Sifrei Torah, no problem. So now let's analyze what we have here. We have two prohibitions. One is ox and a donkey plowing, which all of those three terms are inclusive. They include anything that can fit two animals, scenario, and plowing. And then we have a very similar pasuk where the terms wool and linen and wearing are exclusive. Nothing else is included. Two very different directions that two very similar verses go in. And the question is, how are we supposed to know the difference? Now I'll go you one step further. Lo tacharosh b'shor v'chomor yachdav, do not plow with an ox and a donkey together, is considered a mitzvah which makes very much logic and common sense, which happens to form one of the foundation stones of the whole topic of Tzar Balei Chaim, the avoidance of cruelty to animals. It is given by our sages a reason that it would be uncomfortable or painful for the ox and donkey with different temperaments, perhaps the elephant and the giraffes with different temperaments, to be harnessed together and to protect the animals involved. The Torah says, no, you're not allowed to do that. Caveat, warning. The Torah doesn't say why you shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Chazal said, we're almost positive that we have this one pegged. And they were so confident they had it right that they built the body of law and practice against cruelty to animals on this mitzvah, among others. And among which, later in this own Sedra, we have not muzzling an animal when it's working with food. We have a few other, we have the mitzvah of helping a fellow load or unload his beast of burden. And we are confident that that's the reason. We do find a warning in some of our mitzvah counters and describers that we can't be 100% sure, because otherwise God would have told us. But we're pretty sure we have this one pegged. First and foremost, we do mitzvot because God said. But when mitzvot lend themselves to a common sense understanding, we feel that it enhances our commitment to the mitzvah. The commitment is supposed to be, God said so, so I'm committed. But somehow, we figure out a bunch of the mitzvot, and this one was easy. Now we get to wool and linen. Much more enigmatic. In fact, Sha'atnez is one of the classic chukim. A chok, a mitzvah that God said you do it, and that's enough of a reason. Even though various commentaries have attempted to explain Sha'atnez, it certainly does not lend itself as easily as Lo Tacharosh does. Sha'atnez has been linked to old pagan practices, and that's what makes it forbidden. Then there's the idea that wool is the chief fiber of the animal kingdom, and linen, at least was, the chief fabric from the plant kingdom. And this is one of the forbidden mixtures that cross between the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom. Other prohibitions are animal-animal or animal-plant. And this sort of completes the picture of those things that God did not want as part of his creation. And others suggest that it's a reminder of the vast difference between plant world and the animal world, that the animal world comes with the responsibility of avoiding cruelty. On that note of cruelty, I just want to point out there is a discussion among commentaries as to who the main beneficiary of these mitzvot and proper performance of them is. Is it the animal? Well, certainly the animal benefits when the Torah prohibits a practice which is not kind to the animal. But more importantly, I would go out on a limb and say, is the benefit to the individual. You become a better person by paying attention to those mitzvot that relate to the proper treatment of animals. Yes, the animal benefits, not in all cases, but yes, it does. But most importantly, the Jew with a commitment to Torah and mitzvot becomes a better person. More amazing to me than the fact that these two mitzvot are next to each other is the fact that they are contained in a single parsha. The Torah is divided into portions, not weekly reading portions. I'm not talking about that division. There are no punctuation marks or cantillation marks or pronunciation marks in the Torah. You have just the words flowing, and the only natural division is/are the two types of parshiot, little sections all the way from a couple of words and a verse or two to very long ones of well over 100 verses called Parshiot, Parsha Petucha, an open Parsha, and a Parsha Stuma. The fact of the matter is that Parsha Ki Tetzé consists of 44 different Parshiot that are linked together one after the other. They are 42 stumot and only 2 petuchot, which means thematically they're strung along, where many of the parshiot are their own mitzvah. And here we have 2 different mitzvot. Their common feature is a prohibition of combining that which must stay distinct. But other than that, Shatnez and Lo Tacharosh are very different, as I explained, in the exclusivity or the inclusivity of the words. And one is an easily understood mitzvah, and the other is an enigmatic chok. And they share the same parsha. I believe that this is God's way of saying, pay attention here. You see these 2 kinds of mitzvot, the one you understand and the one that's more difficult to understand? The commitment to them is the same. When you are committed to God's word, it doesn't matter whether you understand them or not. You have to do them or not do them, as the case may be. 2 mitzvot here, 1 inclusive, 1 exclusive. You scratch your head and say, how am I supposed to know? The answer is the oral law. Deuteronomy, Devarim, 17:11, Al pi ha-Torah asher yorucha v'al ha-mishpat asher yomeru lecha ta'aseh. You shall do. Heard, as well as the opening song, are both from Psalm 27, LeDavid, Hashem Ori V'Ishi, which traditionally is recited twice a day from Rosh Chodesh Elul through and including Hoshana Rabbah. Last week we had a few versions. This week, from two different places in Psalm 27, both from the same album, actually from the same medley. The album is called Nostalgia, because they're both old songs. And the name associated with the album is Moshe Mendelwitz. I've played his stuff in the past. Beautiful music. Very, very pleasant and relaxing. And these have been two parts of one of its tracks. Up till now, among other things, we had presented the inclusivity of the words shor and chamor to types of animals, but extended in definition of the Torah law to include other animals. As in contrast to the exclusivity of the term tzemer and pishtim, which means specifically those fibers and fabrics and nothing else. There's another example, again, which I have done in the past, in Parshat Ki Teitzeh, that to me is the most bolate, the one that sticks out the most. The verse says, Ki yeshivu achim yachdav, when brothers live together, umet achad mehem, and one of them dies, uvein ein lo, and he had no ben. I'm not translating that yet. Lo tihye eshet hamet hachutza le'ish zar, the widow of the man that died without a ben, shall not be allowed to marry anyone outside the family, but rather yivamah yavo aleha ulekacha lo leisha viyibma. But her brother-in-law, the deceased's brother, shall take her for a wife. This is the mitzvah known as yibum, and it stands in sharp contrast, diametrically opposed, to the relationship of a sister-in-law and a brother-in-law, which is an incestuous relationship that is forbidden with a death penalty. Again, Charlie is married to Susie. Charlie has a brother, Jacob, and Charlie dies. In one scenario, where Charlie and Susie had children, Susie is forbidden forever to marry or have relations with Jacob. In the specific case where Charlie died without a ben, then not only are Susie and Jacob not forbidden to each other, they are linked to each other and either follow through with a marriage called yibum, or sever their relationship with a divorce-like procedure called chalitza. In our times, there is a ban on yibum, a rabbinic ban, and chalitza is the only solution. But look at that contrast. Susie and Jacob forbidden to each other, or a mitzvah to be with each other, depending on whether Charlie had a ben. So now the big question is, what's a ben? We continue reading that the consummation of this marriage between brother-in-law and sister-in-law called Yibum will continue, v'haya ha-bechor asher te'leid, and the firstborn to them which will be born, Yakum al-Shem Achiv Hamet, will carry on his brother's name. V'lo yimachesh shemo miYisrael. So his name shall not be erased from Israel. Now, picture a small town, a village, in old-time Israel up in the Galilee, the Galilee, where they had their first case like this. Charlie, or whatever his name was, died young in some kind of accident plowing the field. He didn't have a Ben. So the case is brought before the elders of the town, who are not completely scholarly and knowledgeable. They know the Torah, but they have little holes in their education. And they say, okay, what's the story here? Now, the fact is that Charlie and Susie, in this small village where their names probably were not Charlie and Susie, have had a daughter. Cute little girl. No sons. The elders get together and one of them says, hey, Torah says, guy dies without a ben. A ben is a son. He didn't have a son. So we follow what the Torah says and we recommend the mitzvah performed of Yibum, where Charlie's brother marries Charlie's widow, Susie, and they have a child to carry on the name of Jacob. It makes sense to them that the word Ben should mean son, because having a daughter is not really going to carry the name of the deceased, but a son would, or in this case, the substitute son from the Yavama. Somebody else raises the objection, maybe Ben means child, because we have places in the Torah where Ben is the inclusive word for sons and daughters, children. And if that would be the case, Charlie's having a daughter would preclude Yibum and forbid Jacob and Susie from marrying. Big difference. The fact of the matter is, in this context, Ben means child. It is inclusive, sons and daughters, grandsons and granddaughters, offspring, all inclusive. If he dies without any offspring, there is Yibum. If he had an offspring, including a daughter, there is no Yibum, and the brother-in-law and sister-in-law are forbidden forever. Big difference. How do we know that Ben is inclusive and not exclusive? How do we know that the brother-in-law and sister-in-law, in the case of the daughter, are forbidden to each other rather than having a mitzvah to marry each other? The only answer that fits is Devarim 11:17. When the Torah says, Al pi haTorah asher yorucha, according to the Torah, the teachings which they shall teach you. And Chazal have taught us that the word Ben in the topic of Yibum refers to sons as well as daughters, all inclusive. It even went against the logic in my story of one of the elders of the town, which is not relevant because we have the oral Torah. And the oral Torah says Yibum exists only when the man died with no offspring alive. Here's a different kind of song, one from Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur davening, Mordechai ben David, v'chol maminim.
Maminim shel chai v'kayom, v'chuil maminim, v'chuil maminim, maminim shel chai v'kayom. Ha'atoiv meitiv meitiv l'roim l'roim v'latoivim. Ha'atoiv meitiv meitiv l'roim l'roim v'latoivim. Ha'atoiv meitiv meitiv l'roim l'roim v'latoivim. Toiv meitiv meitiv l'roim l'roim v'latoivim. V'chuil maminim v'chuil maminim maminim shel chai v'kayom. V'chuil maminim v'chuil maminim maminim shel chai v'kayom. Toiv meitiv meitiv l'roim l'roim v'latoivim. Toiv meitiv meitiv l'roim.
Let me finish the show, not the parsha, but the show, with a look at a different mitzvah, not the kind that we've analyzed till now. There are a pair of mitzvot in the Torah, one from Ki Teitze, one elsewhere, vis-a-vis paying a laborer on time. It's a positive command, biyomo titein scharo, pay the laborer on time. There is a companion prohibition of linat schar sachir, the delaying of the wage. Not to leave it over for the morning under the assumption that the normal time to pay is the end of the day. Now, if you picture in your mind hiring people to pick grapes from your field or throw rocks out of the field for planting purposes or whatever. Guy puts in the whole day's work. He gets a certain wage. You're supposed to pay him at the end of the day. We have a lot of situations in our lives that fit that scenario without realizing it. For example, taking a haircut. The act of going to a barber and taking a haircut is, in essence, hiring the barber to cut your hair. You hire him to render a service, and the norm of payment is at the conclusion of his rendering the service, after your haircut, after he held a mirror to the back of your head so that you could see what it looks like in the front mirror, you're supposed to pay him. Paying him on time is a mitzvat aseh in the Torah. Delaying payment is forbidden. So you can't say to him, I'll come by in a couple of days with your money, unless he allows it. He's allowed to waive the requirement of paying him on time if he so chooses. The problem with that is that he might agree to delay the payment, but he might not be happy with it. And he's a little embarrassed to tell you that he needs the money now, which is probably one of the reasons for the rule in the first place. Because we're talking about people who don't have large bank accounts and who do count on wages or payment for services rendered as soon as they're rendered. Another example, which is even weirder, and let me go back to the barber shop before we get to the other one. I used to go to a barber who had a sign pasted on his mirror of a list of 17 different mitzvot in the Torah that it would be possible to have intention on fulfilling or not violating while taking a haircut. And one of them was to pay on time. The others involved not using a razor for the corner of your head and not using a razor on your shaving and doing something lichvod yom tov. Interesting, by the way, with 2 weeks plus left to Rosh Hashanah, taking a haircut today can be considered lichvod yom tov, in honor of the festival, the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Up to 1 month before is considered attached to that event. And you take a haircut now, you have in mind L'shem Kavod Yom Tov. Now let's get back to taxi. You take a taxi, tell him where you want him to take you, and you are hiring a laborer to provide you a service. And therefore, the Torah's requirement is to pay him on time. And the Torah's prohibition is not to delay payment. Now, I use this example because you could take it one step further. Nobody, unless they're personal friends of the taxi driver, no one is going to say at the conclusion of a ride, I'll catch you next time, or I'll come by in a few days and pay you. It is a given that you take a taxi ride, and at the conclusion of the ride, you pay. So you're going to do it anyway. You're not going to delay his payment. You are going to pay him on time. That's two mitzvot in the Torah. It therefore should be in our mind that we are fulfilling these mitzvot in the Torah when we pay the taxi driver. Now, I've tried this, and it's not easy. When you get out of a taxi, your mind is only on finding the money in your pocket and waiting for your change and counting your change. But if you can manage that little extra step of saying in your mind, L'shem mitzvot biyomo titein scharo, ulashem mitzvat lo talin pu'ulat zachir ad haboker. Lo talin, whatever. Don't remember the exact words. Then you are mekayim the mitzvah. You fulfill the mitzvah on a higher level. There are things that we do that are mitzvot. And if you don't think about them, you still did a mitzvah. But the fulfillment of the mitzvah is on a higher level if you have it in mind. Last point in this topic, a babysitter. This is not uncommon, and it goes to a babysitter, it goes to a cleaner. You have a cleaner once a week, you have a babysitter when you go out, and the standard is to pay the babysitter at the end of her job or his job. Let's say you come back and you are out for 3.5 hours and you owe 120 shekel. All you have is a 200 shekel note. So you can do one of two things, one of three things. You have change of a 200 shekel note? No. You have any money? No. Okay, I don't have change. If you come by tomorrow evening, or I'll come to your house and I'll pay you tomorrow when I have the change. Will that be okay? If you don't say, will that be okay, then you're in violation of delaying payment of a person who rendered you a service. And that is a serious issur in the Torah. If the person says, it's okay, I'll get it tomorrow, then if that okay is sincere, then you're not violating delaying the wages. If it's not sincere because they really want the money, they need it, they're going on their way home to buy groceries or whatever, and without it they will go without some food, then it's a serious problem. But let's say it's an honest, that's fine, I'll take it tomorrow. So you're not in violation of delaying the paying of wages, but guess what? You have not fulfilled the Torah's mitzvah of biyomo titein scharo. It is better to say, I don't have change, here's 200 shekel, 120 is what I'm paying you, and the 80 will either apply it to the next time you're here, or you'll give it back to me sometime in the future. In both of those cases, you have fulfilled the mitzvah aseh in the Torah to pay a wage earner on time. And these are no small things. No mitzvah really is small. But this is a modern example where we're not even conscious of the fact that a mitzvah is in the picture. And we should be. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Ish Tamea.
בשונו.